Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. I mentioned it before the break, but we're going to talk now about OpenAI's new social media app, which for me is a little bit freaky. It's called Sora 2. And the idea is that you can create deepfakes. I wish there was a better way to say it. Maybe our next guest will be able to do that. Glenn Mulcahy, the founder of Mojo Fest and the mobile journalism and AI expert. Glenn, it's always great to chat with you. I gave a very top line overview of what this is. Just introduce us to what this app does.
Well, Sora 2 is the latest generation of video image generators, which are all basically they've been around now for about 6-7 months with different platforms bringing various iterations of it. To give you a very shorthand version of it, you put a line of text or a short paragraph into AI, OpenAI, and basically ask it to generate a video on a specific topic. And now, unlike the earlier generations, it really does have a hyper-realism to it. And this time, just to take it a step further, OpenAI has added sound as well as pictures. So even on their demo videos, you can see that the facial expressions, even the detail of eyes, all the fingers are intact. All the kind of easy tells that were there in the early generation one seem to have been fixed. And the audio element really gives an even hyper realism, if you like, to the video content. The demo stuff that I've seen has actually been alarmingly good, to be perfectly honest.
I'm kind of torn on this one, right? Because from a technological point of view and as a tech fan, I'm blown away by it. And I just think it is an incredible piece of technology. It's remarkable to see what could be done, how it could be done, the potential benefits of it. And yet, with my journalist hat on, all that I can hear are alarm bells, because we know that as soon as something is developed, yes, it can be used, but it can also be misused and abused. And that's where I wanted to bring you in on this conversation, because there is a very scary and sinister side to all of this as well.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, a huge question that is still hanging over the whole evolution of AI is what guardrails or policies are in place to basically protect people from misuse. And the problem is these video generators are now getting to the point that they're so good that even someone with a trained and discerning eye might easily fall prey to believing that what they're looking at is real. So you put that in the context of things that, you know, we were sounding alarms about, you know, 12, 18 months ago with the likes of text generators, where we could see political potential disinformation and manipulation, that sort of stuff. Now we're into the whole world of knocking off people's personalities, potentially scamming members of a family, both voice clones and video clones. Now we've already seen one or two of these examples, which are incredible, where, like, I think in the last number that I saw, it was something like 25 million was scammed from a company on a Zoom call, where the entire Zoom call was basically just fake avatars behaving like the CEO and CFO of a big company in South Korea. So the nefarious use cases are going to explode, and it's a real genuine cause for concern. And it's hard to know whether governments can regulate it, and if so, if they can offset what is a very, very powerful and very well-funded lobby, which is all pro-AI and pro-AI hype. It's really, we're getting to a point of a kind of a, yeah, there's an inflection point coming, and it's not all looking positive.
It's not. And I think, you know, I just have seen it on my own social feeds, right? And stepping away from this platform in particular, but on my own social feeds in the last few weeks, between Instagram and LinkedIn in particular, I've actually closed both of those apps, tutting, going, oh, would you go away? Because so much of what I'm seeing is AI generated. And you can tell a million miles away, there are accounts purporting to be news outlets. There are people who are doctoring images of celebrities saying that they've done this, they've done that, they've done whatever. You're seeing absolute nonsense drivel appearing on LinkedIn from so-called professionals. And it's actually exhausting. And that's just text and image based. So when you add in this extra layer, I'm now wondering, are we going to see the death of social media as a result of this? Because it's not an enjoyable place to be anymore.
No, it's not. I mean, there have been statistics, even just in the last couple of months, reaffirming this concept of the dead internet theory, or the AI slop phenomenon. And it's exactly what you're talking about. It's every one of these social media apps, they don't apply. I mean, they have what I would call token policies, where you self-report AI-generated content, but you can easily bypass those. And as a result of it, like, my feed, just like yours, is basically overwhelmed with AI slop. the dead internet theory is the one that actually I'm most intrigued and alarmed by. It's this idea that we'll get to the point where people will stop using social media or stop using the internet because they believe that everything that they see now is basically fake. And it really raises big questions about, you know, the trust that we have in institutions that are supposed to be trustworthy and how we communicate with them is on social media, because someone can easily now, using AI, basically create a clone of account that is very, very similar or looks identical to the original one and just churn out at scale complete disinformation that a lot of people will basically fall prey to. There's no question. The most recent survey I saw this year is saying that we've already surpassed 51% of all traffic on the internet being basically either AI or bot driven. So we're already in the minority, if only a little, but it's only going to get worse, I think.
Yeah, and I suppose what I'm now fearful of is when this platform arrives to Ireland, because at the moment it's only available on iOS and it's in the US and it's kind of invite only, but we know that that's how these things work. It'll come here eventually. But I fear that people will start using it for a bit of crack. You might remember a few months ago, everyone was doing the Barbie version of themselves or the toy hero version of themselves, and it was really fun and cute and whatever. But I think if we start seeing brands and politicians in particular, which some of them have been using AI for fun, if we start using it and normalizing it and accepting it, that's going to just, you know, open the dam for every Tom, Dick and Harry to start using it and flood the internet even more with this junk. We also know, because we spoke about it before, that young people are only getting their news from social media. So I genuinely am worried about the level of noise and crap, for want of a better word, that's going to be here, there and everywhere over the coming months.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, a story broke in the last couple of days about a AI actress, I use those words very selectively, Tilly Norwood, who apparently is in negotiations with a Hollywood studio to basically appear in a film. Now, as you can imagine, and rightly so, I would argue, it's triggered outrage from actors and actors' representative bodies right across the world, not even just stateside. But I mean, it's the sharp tip, if you like, of what's actually been happening for months. Over 18 months ago, we saw an influencer run by an ad agency out of Spain who passed the 1 million followers and started to get big brand deals endorsing products, and it was completely AI-generated content. It really is a case of not really getting a sense of what the audience's perception is. This is something that I think you and I touched on a conversation a while back, which is while we hear so much hype about all the new features and amazing bells and whistles are coming out in AI, the one thing that I still do not actually see is real sentiment analysis from the audience. One, do we want this? And two, if we don't, what the hell can we do about it? There was a campaign that I just saw again on social media just yesterday where I think the website was called Friend or Friends.com. They put a fortune into a campaign that was running on the London Underground advertising. You don't need real friends because our friends are always there for you. They never judge. They always listen. Mm-hmm. And it's a scary thing because literally just a few weeks ago, a 30-something student in one of my courses basically told me how she has come to completely and utterly rely emotionally on ChatGPT. And the alarm bells were screaming in my head, but I was trying to be polite and non-judgmental at the same time going, there's so many things that you might want to factor in about that, because one, everything you divulge is basically subject to scrutiny. There's no privacy rules protecting what you converse about. And two, Sam Altman himself, the CEO of OpenAI, has come out and said the number one use case for ChatGPT globally right now is basically as a kind of therapist, counselor, virtual buddy, which that scares the life out of me. I've got four kids under 14 years of age and I'm thinking, oh, mother of God, what world are they going into?
Yeah, and I think, you know, stuff like that, again, not trying to be judgmental, because I've used it at times. If I have, you know, a big meeting or whatever, like I'm an introvert, I overthink things. I've put stuff in there before. How do I gameplay this situation or that situation? And I do find it useful. But I also have human beings that I'm talking to and looking for advice. I have mentors and all that kind of stuff. And I do genuinely worry for younger people, not only that they're using this technology for that, but that they don't feel that they have real life routes to go down to engage with, to find help. And that's going to be an epidemic in 5 or 10 years' time, if not sooner.
Well, we're already seeing signs of it, aren't we? There was that horrific case of the kid, I've forgotten his name, in the States, who basically showed signs of basically having suicidal tendencies. And on the final day of his life, ChatGPT showed him how to tie a better knot so he could commit suicide. I mean, it literally, when I read that article, I've listened to a couple of podcasts analysing the backstory to it. It really brought it into fine-tuned focus, because one of the things that I, on a podcast actually was discussed is how at one stage OpenAI apparently basically shortened the kind of safety testing phase in order to beat Google to market with a new release. And that's a big, big claim. But at the end of the day, it just shows that at times, the motivation to get these to market is actually driven 100% by financials, not by best practices. And that is scary when it starts to impact real in the real world on people's, you know, social, mental capacity, and in this case, basically driving towards suicide. That is something that I think hopefully, I genuinely say hand on heart, hopefully will drive some degree of regulation, because we've seen in the States where the current administration has already tried to basically ban any type of limitations or regulations or guardrails, which is unthinkable. Europe at least has taken a step in the right direction with bringing in policies. But I think my greatest concern, Jess, is that this technology, as per what we've just witnessed in the last 48 hours, is developing so fast, regulating it is nigh on impossible at this stage. The genie is 100% out of the bottle.
Yeah, and we've spoken about that case that you referred to there, Adam Rain, who died by suicide. It's utterly tragic. And when you look at some of the documents that the parents handed into the court, I mean, it's very, very damning. Now, we should say OpenAI, it's before the courts now, and we'll continue to follow that case over time. But you mentioned there the genie's out of the bottle. I feel like, yes, it's out of the bottle. Yes, more and more people are engaging with these platforms. But would you be in favour of Europe, because we know we have different rules here in Europe than they do in the States, putting the kibosh or putting some sort of ring fence around new applications of AI, such as the Sora 2 app, to try and catch up a little bit? Because for a while there, for like a millisecond, we were almost ahead of it in terms of our legislation and our regulation. But it's constantly mutating and developing.
It's constantly mutating and developing, but I mean, when we spoke at the Radio Days conference several months back, we were talking about some of the kind of leading voices within the AI world. These are people who are all very, very senior executives in some of the frontier agencies, including the likes of OpenAI and others. And so many of them, increasingly, as I listen to podcasts, they're coming out at this stage saying that we actually really need collaboratively right across the world, in the same way that we'd basically the kind of nuclear proliferation treaty, we need to agree that we need to take a pause and start to do at least a discussion around where we're going. Because there is an absolute insane rat race, particularly between the States and China, but there's plenty of other players in there as well, about trying to hit this concept of AGI. And no one seems to want to talk about what that actually means for people or humanity or the end users. It's just driven by the big, big, big billions of dollars being put into the frontier models. I think Europe took a step in the right direction by trying to bring regulation in. The problem is this is such a fast-moving target. One policy is not going to be enough. It's something that needs to effectively be organic and revised probably every 3 to 6 months, because there are so many new directions and so many new cases that you can draw upon as an indication of where nefarious use really has tangible impacts in the real world. And I completely hear the whole Oppenheimer argument about if we don't do it, someone else will do it. But like some of these guys genuinely, and I don't want to sound ultra alarmist, but some of these guys who have the inside track really know where the evolution of these models are in closed laboratory environments, not what's in the public domain. And these guys are genuinely saying that this could be an existential risk. Surely that's enough to make people say, okay, let's do a little discussion about weighing up the pros and cons of slowing things down just for a discussion, just even for a couple of months, which they did try. I think it was over a year and a bit ago that we had that letter signed by 200 plus people basically saying, yes, we should take a pause. The effect of that letter lasted for 48 hours. Microsoft blew through it saying we can't sustain this. It is crazy. And I definitely think that what probably needs to happen at state level is that governments grab the thistle and start to poll the public for a consensus on what the public thought on it is. Because I genuinely have come to the stage, similar to you with social media, that I find that my timeline, particularly on Instagram, but other platforms too, is just a diatribe of marketing materials that is all pro-AI. I mean, if I've seen the headline, Hollywood is done, once today alone, I've probably seen it 30 times. And it's all hype. But there's not enough energy being spent on actually discussing what the real risks are, what the potential timeline we're looking at for the development of AGI is, and what that really means. I mean, you know this, I do training for people. I was literally in London only a few weeks back doing a training course in AI. These are high-level government executives that I was teaching in this case, and all of them were aware where the technology was at. And yet when I showed case studies of what some of these leading pioneers are saying, and they're on the conference circuit talking about it, so it's not like they're just whispering among themselves, all of them were taken aback and kind of, well, how come I've not seen any of this? And it's because, well, because your feed, just like my feed, has been dominated by the marketing hype. And not enough of the messaging about the risks is getting through that. And that is a real concern.
Yeah. And look, I'd love to say that you or I or somebody out there has the silver bullet solution to fix it or to remedy it or to put guardrails in place. But as you said there, we're just not at that stage yet. But we will continue to talk about it. We will continue to highlight the concerns as well as celebrating the great technology. But I do think we need to have a grown-up conversation about this, the implications, not only for our young people, which is obviously massively important, but also people, adults, who are lonely and introverted like me, or who maybe don't feel like they have people in their lives that they can reach out to and are turning to this technology. We just need to be mindful of the implications of it all. Glenn, I could talk to you for hours, but unfortunately we're against the clock. Thank you so much for joining me here again on News Talk.
Thank you, Jess.
Yeah, that was Glenn Mulcahy of MojoFest. I'd love to hear your thoughts. What are your concerns when it comes to this technology? What do you think needs to be done to protect our young people? And as I said there, our adults as well. I genuinely am concerned about this, and it's not because I'm a buzzkill, it's just because I can see, as Glenn outlined there, where this is going. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com, and if you've been impacted by anything that we have spoken about during that interview, you can reach out to the Samaritans 24 hours a day on 116123.